This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
And gentlemen and ladies, firstly we have apologies from Rabbi Kosofsky, who was meant to be in the chair this evening, but has got rather bad flu and asked to be excused. And in his absence, just a couple of words of introduction. Firstly, the organization for this evening is credited to mainly to Mr. Richard Hochstetter and his wife, and I would like to thank them for organizing it. There really are three Yahrzeits this evening. The one is the Ponovizhia Rov Zatzal, the second is Reb Eli Lopion, and the third, strangely enough, is Rabbi Kosofsky's grandfather, the old Rabbi Kosofsky. All three of them have in common the fact that they were the link between our present generation and the generation of Eastern European Torah Jewry. Each of them left Eastern Europe to re-establish Torah in different parts of the world. The Ponovizhia Rov went to Israel, Reb Eli went to London, and Rabbi Kosofsky came to South Africa. And there's a degree of interconnection, particularly as far as the Ponovizhia Rov and Reb Eli are concerned, and us in South Africa. The story is that the Ponovizhia Rov was in London collecting money for his yeshiva in Ponovizh, not in Israel. This was still in the early days. And it had been suggested to him to come to South Africa to collect money here. However, coming to collect money in those days wasn't as they do it today, 2 or 3 weeks, and you get a list from somebody and you go around and off you go. Coming to collect money meant coming here for several months, which was a tremendous sacrifice for the person who was collecting the money, particularly a person of the stature of the Ponovizhia Rov. He'd heard that it was a rough place to collect money, as it in fact emerged that in the beginning when he came he was given a very cold shoulder by most of the community. It was only after a considerable amount of time that he began to be accepted and the people began to relate to him with respect, never mind with covet. And he was worried. Does he need the Fadrus to go to a country where they don't know what Torah is, where they don't know what a Rosh Yeshiva is, where they don't know what giving charity is, giving all that time and maybe coming back with nothing? And he was in a state of complete confusion. And I've heard the story in the last couple of weeks from two sources. The one is from the Ponovizhia Rov's son, Reb Avrom Kohaneman, who was here recently, who heard it from his father. And the other one was from Rabbi Kosofsky, who heard it from Reb Eli. So we heard the story from the two people who participated in it. So the Ponovizhia Rov went to see Reb Eli. And he asked Reb Eli, he said to Reb Eli, you know, in the old times, there was a Kohen Gadol, and the Kohen Gadol had an Urim V'Tumim. And if you needed to know a matter that was of importance to the Klal, that was of importance to the whole community, you went to the Kohen and you put the question and you got an answer. And you knew with absolute clarity what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted from you. So Reb Eli looked at the Ponovizhia Rov with a blank stare and said, so, carry on. So the Ponovizhia Rov said, today we don't have such a thing. So Reb Eli shook his head. He said, that's not correct. We have it today as well. So the Ponovizhia Rov said, what do you mean? So Reb Eli told him about the Gaon's Goyro, which he used to practice. The Gaon's Goyro is a Kabbalistic sort of thing, which is a complicated method of asking a question and getting an answer. It involves, firstly, it has to be the right person who puts the question. Secondly, it should be for the interests of the Klal, it should be matters of the community, not matters of an individual. Thirdly, it requires that one sits and learns for 7 or 10 hours or something non-stop, and then one puts the question, and then by searching in a particular formula, according to a particular formula in Tanakh, you find a particular posuk, and in that posuk the answer is meant to be. So Reb Eli said, this is an important matter. You're talking about raising money for the establishment of Torah. This is something that one uses the Gaon's Goyro for. And Reb Eli proceeded to do so. And the pasuk that came up was the pasuk in Miketz, where the Ribbono Shel Olam said to Yaakov, when Yaakov was in exactly the same situation, he didn't know whether he should go to Mitzrayim, which is in Africa, or he shouldn't go to Mitzrayim to see his son. He didn't know whether it was true that his son was alive or it wasn't true. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, don't worry, Yaakov, go down, I'll go with you and I'll bring you back. That was the pasuk that came up. And on the basis of that, the Pono Vizhirov came down to South Africa. In South Africa, firstly, he created the link between South Africa and the yeshivish world overseas. Until that time, there was a tremendous barrier. Now, these were people who had left Lithuania the previous century, many of them, or the early years of this century, and there was no real contact with Lithuanian Jewry anymore, and the Jews were drifting further and further away. And here the Pono Vizhirov came out and, after a period of time, endeared himself to the community and recreated for them the values of the Lithuanian style of life which they had left behind. As far as I personally am concerned, it's even closer, because the Pono Vizhirov, Rabbi Yosef Kahaneman, was in fact the shadchan between my father and Rebellion. Although Rebellion was my father's uncle, England from South Africa in those days was a long way away, and my father never realized quite how great and well known his uncle was, and that he was a Rosh Yeshiva taking Talmidim in England. And it was Pono Vizhirov who arranged for my father to go over and study under Rebellion, which he did for many years, living in Rebellion's house and studying at his feet for many years, and became probably the closest Talmid that Rebellion ever had. This was told to me by Rebellion's sons. So the closeness is more than coincidental. There seems to be a whole pattern, as far as we in South Africa are concerned, in the relationship between these two Gedolim, who both happened to die on the same date, 1 year apart. Rabbi Kosofsky told me he was going to tell another story, which also happened to him, and this I had not heard before. And you must understand that the purpose of even repeating such stories is not because Rebellia or the Pono Vizhirov or any one of these people would take any pleasure in having these stories told. In fact, they used to be opposed to it. But the tendency today is among the Hasidische sects to tell all sorts of fantastic stories about their Gedolim, and they're all true stories. We don't tell these fantastic stories about our Gedolim, not because they don't happen, because we don't consider them terribly important. But nevertheless, from time to time, it's important to know that the moifsim, as far as they call it, these wonderful things, are things which happen every day in the life of any gadol, of anybody who stands at the head of Klal Yisrael. These things happen all the time, except among the Hasidim, it's customary to talk about it, and among the Misnagdim, it's customary not to talk about it. But on an occasion such as this, Rabbi Kosofsky felt, and I agreed, and he asked me to repeat it, that he would like to tell the following story, also to illustrate the connection between Gedolim, between leaders of Klal Yisrael. And that was that one Yom Kippur, when Rabbi Kosofsky was studying in Kfar Hasidim, just before Ne'ilah, Rebellia got up and he said, everybody needs a Yom Kippur, but sometimes one Yom Kippur isn't enough. Sometimes one needs two Yom Kippurs. If Chas V'Sholom, a father dies, it's a Yom Kippur for the family. So they've got one Yom Kippur at the end of the year, and they've got another Yom Kippur, which is the death of the leader of the family. If a Rav of a town dies, it's a Yom Kippur for the whole town. There's a Kapporah, there's atonement for the whole city. And if a Gadol B'Yisrael, if a leader of the whole of Israel dies, it's a Kapporah for the whole of Klal Yisrael. And he sat down. Nobody knew what he was talking about, but he had been very troubled and uneasy right through the Yom Kippur. People had noticed that he wasn't his usual self. After Motzei Yom Kippur, a couple of the boys went out into the village and they heard the news that the Bris Gerov had died after Kol Nidre the night before. Obviously there was no way that Rebellion could have known that. There was no way that the news could have reached him. But that's as it was. The Bris Gerov had died. The boys came back and told the other boys in the yeshiva, and they got together to decide how they were going to break the news to Rebellion. This wasn't going to be an easy thing. Eventually they decided on who the delegation would be, and they went quaking to Rebellion's door. They just didn't know how they were going to break the news. They knocked on his door, they went in, and he looked at them. And the Belia saw them as they came into the door, and he put up his hand to them. He said, "Don't worry, I know. You don't have to tell me." And he left the room and he went into his bedroom, where the Rebbetzin who used to look after him told the boys later on, he paced the floor the whole night, he didn't go to sleep. One of the experiences that I did have was in the middle of a Seder. The boys were learning in the yeshiva. Rebellion got up and said Kaddish. And this wasn't long before he died and people started saying Shem. And he was getting old. Middle of the Seder said Kaddish and everybody answered. And then he sat down and he carried on learning. We heard later on in the news, at that moment, an aeroplane was shot down about 10 miles away from Kfar Chasidim. And some Jewish pilots from the airport were killed. From the Air Force were killed. This was a man who considered himself not a Rosh Yeshiva, not a father of a family. This was a man who considered himself a father of Klal Yisrael. This is somebody who considered himself responsible for Klal Yisrael, aware of Klal Yisrael, and caring for Klal Yisrael. The same applies to all our Gedolim, and certainly, specifically, to the Ponovizh Rov, who saw himself as the father of any Jew. Anybody could come to him and talk to him, discuss something with him, and you felt you were talking to your own grandfather, even if he'd never known you, even if he'd never seen you before. If you were a Jew, he cared about you. You mattered, you were important. That was all that there was. This is a stature of godliness, which today one finds is not that frequent. Today each person considers, each Talmid Chacham considers himself responsible for his little area, for his little crowd, for his scene. The concept of Gedolim who consider themselves responsible and heads of the whole of Klal Yisrael is something which unfortunately is not too frequently found today, although of course it exists and always will exist. That's by way of introduction. I don't want to keep you too long, but I had before me the option of either telling you more about rebellion or telling you something in the name of rebellion, and I've chosen the second. One's talking to an audience of Amaratzin, and one talks about the Gedolim. If one's talking to an audience of the Bnei Torah, the most I can tell you about Rebellia is to repeat something which he said so that you can understand the kind of thing he used to care about and the kind of way he used to speak. The Gemara says in Tainis Daf Kafei Amud Beis, Shuv Maiseh B'Rabbi Eliezer. There was a case concerning Rabbi Eliezer, Sheyorad Lifnei HaTeva, who went to daven before the Omud to pray for rain. There was a drought. V'omar etzrim v'arba brochus, and he said 24 brochus and tefillos, requesting rain and praying for rain. V'loy na'ane, and there was no response. Yorad Rabbi Akiva acharav, so Rabbi Akiva took the Omud immediately after Rabbi Eliezer. The Omar, and he said, Avinu Malkeinu ein lonu melech elo'otso. Avinu Malkeinu, we have no king other than you. Avinu Malkeinu lemancho rachem aleinu. Avinu Malkeinu, for your own sake, have mercy upon us. The Yorda Deshonim, and the rain came down. Bear in mind that Rabbi Akiva was the Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer. So this must have been an embarrassing situation for Rabbi Eliezer. Havu meranim yirabonim. Not only was it embarrassing as it stood, but it was even worse because the Rabbonim, the people in the Beis HaMedrash, started laughing. They started mocking Rabbi Eliezer. Yotzeso Basko, and a voice from heaven came out of Omra, and it said a very strange thing. Lo mipnei shezeh godol mizeh. The reason that Rabbi Akiva was answered and Rabbi Eliezer was not answered is not because Rabbi Akiva is any greater than Rabbi Eliezer. Ela shezeh marvir al midoso vezeh eino marvir al midoso. This one has developed refinement and this one hasn't developed refinement. It's a strange thing. Rabbi Eliezer, the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva, to say that Eino Mavir Amidoso, that he doesn't have that human refinement which Rabbi Akiva has? That was a question that Rebbe used to ask. And this was a shmos that he often used to give before Rosh Hashanah, right before Rosh Hashanah, at a similar time to where we're standing right now. And he explained it in the following way. He said, of course, Rabbi Eliezer was no less refined than Rabbi Akiva. But there are two kinds of people who can achieve refinement. Some people are born with it, and some people have to work for it. Rabbi Eliezer, who came from a family of Talmidei Chachomim, who in turn came from a family of Talmidei Chachomim, a whole line of Rosh Yeshivas and leaders of the community and Rabbonim, he was born with it. He was born with the inherent midos, he was born with the inherent refinement and character that a Godel B'Yisrael needed at that particular time. But Rabbi Akiva was a different story. Rabbi Akiva was born in Am Ha'aretz, and we know the degree to which he was in Am Ha'aretz, and the extent to which he used to despise Talmidei Chachomim, he was such an Am Ha'aretz. He couldn't tolerate them. This went on until he was 40 years old. It was only at 40 that he started the process of change. And when he became a refined human being, he had done it himself. Then he used to say that's what a Baal Tshuva is. A Baal Tshuva is a person who's made himself, who's created himself, and he stands in certain ways on a much higher level than somebody who's been born with all the refinement ready-made. What do you need when there's a situation of drought and you want some rain to come? Basically, you've got to be able to appeal to the Ribbono Shel Olam on the ground that we know that you've decided there should be a drought. We know that we've done something deserving of a drought. But change your mind. Do us a favor. Change your mind. Okay, you've decided, but change. Rabbi Eliezer had no right to demand that the Ribbono Shel Olam should change, because he doesn't know what it is to change. He was born holy and he was holy. Rabbi Akiva, who knew what it was to change, Rabbi Akiva, who changed his views, who changed his attitudes, who changed his ashkofas, who changed his passions, his feelings, his personality, his character, from that of an Amoritz to that of one of the greatest Talmidei Chachomim we've ever had, to have reached from the very bottom to the very top, that's a man who's entitled to go to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, I demand that you change your mind. I know how hard it is to change. I know what it is when you've taken a certain line to have to change your mind about that. But I've done it for you, Ribbono Shel Olam. You now do it for me. And that's what it means, that not that Rabbi Eliezer didn't have midos chas v'sholom, but that Rabbi Akiva made his own midos, he created his own midos, and therefore he was more qualified to ask for rain. Whereas it was Rabbi Eliezer, who was born that way, who always had it, who was naturally a tzaddik, and didn't have the right to demand such a thing from the Ribbono Shel Olam. I mentioned last night about the changes that have come over all of you, those who are learning in the yeshiva, those who are learning in the Beis HaMedrash, changes that I mentioned last night, not just in terms of attitude, not just in terms of spiritual changes, but even in terms of physical changes, that one sees a person sitting here today who is not the same person he was a year ago or 2 years ago or 4 years ago, literally a different person. He looks different, he thinks differently, he acts differently, he behaves differently, he responds and reacts differently. It's not the same person. Happens to be dressed in the same body, happens to have the same source and the same origin, but a different person altogether. That's what a Baal Tshuva really is. Somebody who's taken himself and changed himself into a different being. Rebbeinu used to say that Torah doesn't automatically change you. Don't think that it's just because you happen to have sat and be learning that you've changed. It's not something which happens automatically. Doing mitzvahs, Rebbeinu used to say, is not going to automatically change you. Doing a mitzvah automatically, or learning automatically, is going to have no effect on you whatever. The only time it's going to change you is when there's the correct emotion, the correct feeling, the correct spiritual attitude to what it is that one's doing. And as an example of this, he used to give the following case. The din is that a woman is first, if one marries a woman, the first stage is erusin. First one has a sort of semi-marriage, where you have the disadvantages of marriage and none of the advantages. And later on, the erusin and the nisuim, and there used to be about a year between the erusin and the nisuim. The din is that if a woman in her erusin period, after the erusin but before the chuppah, if she's adulterous, there's a death penalty, and the death that was given was skila, the worst of the four death penalties, skila. If, however, she was adulterous after the nisuin, then there was still a death penalty, but the death penalty was different. After the nisuin, she used to get chenek, which is the lightest of the four death sentences. There's skila, stoning, there's cherev, sreifa, and the very bottom one is chenek. Then they used to ask, why is it that there should be this difference? Surely after the nisuyim she's more married than she was just after the erusin. Surely it's more adulterous to be adulterous after the nisuyim than it is after the erusin. Surely the death penalty should be more severe after the nisuyim than it should be after the erusin. And he used to answer, there's one difference, an emotional difference, between the avera done by the woman after her erusin and the avera done by the woman after her nisuyim. A woman who's adulterous after she's married with nisuyim does so in trepidation. She might be found out. She's already living in her husband's home. She's expected to be home. There's a place where she's supposed to be at a particular time. She's not free and easy. And she runs the risk of being discovered. So that at the moment of committing the avera, there's a little bit of fear in her heart. A fear which isn't present when she's only been erusin. Rebbeinu used to say that fear is the lowest of all emotions. There's no emotion lower than that. But nevertheless, to do an avera and feel worried about it actually diminishes the onus, diminishes the punishment that's meted out for that particular avera. And he used to say in the name of Rabbi Itzhak Petterburger that when you do averas, he says it's written up in the book upstairs, and it's written like this, so and so, on such and such a date, at such and such a time, at such and such a place, committed an avera, and he said, oi. And so and so committed an avera at such and such a time, at such a place, and he didn't say, oi. That's an important part of how one does the avera. One is doing it already. To do it and to feel miserable afterwards and let down and worried and upset, that's a far more refined or less unrefined kind of avera. But a person who does it and feels nothing for it at all after it. The Rebbe used to say, if that's the difference that pachad, that fear makes, and fear is the lowest of emotions, imagine if you don't do the avera out of fear. Imagine if the fear actually brings you to stop yourself short of doing the avera. How wonderful the Ribbono Shel Olam considers that to be. And imagine even further, imagine it's not fear. Imagine it's love of the Ribbono Shel Olam which actually gets you to stop. You're about to do it and you think, Ribbono Shel Olam, such a thing, and my Father in heaven, how can I do it? And for love of the Ribbono Shel Olam, you hold yourself back. Can you imagine what a credit that is against your name? And still more, said Rebbeinu, what happens if you do a mitzvah because of love of the Ribbono Shel Olam? You love God so much and you understand so well the beauty and the correctness of that mitzvah, that that's what brings you to do the mitzvah, and you do it with joy and excitement and happiness because you're fulfilling the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What a mitzvah that is, compared to a man who just does the mitzvah so-so. He used this to illustrate the important place that the emotion plays in the doing of a mitzvah. And so it is with all that we do. When we sit down to learn, and when we sit down or we begin to do a mitzvah, we should concentrate over the coming year, because we've already made so much progress that there can be a tremendous amount more progress that can be made in the next year if we concentrate on one particular thing. Just before we do the mitzvah, or just before we open our gemaras, to stop for just a brief moment and to think to ourselves what it is we're about to do. Just to realize this isn't just gemara, like you sit and do mathematics, science, and literature, gemara. Just to stop and realize this is the Torah of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's our only link with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're studying His will, we're studying what He wants us to do and how He wants us to live. We're studying what reality is through the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's the holiest thing that we have, it's the thing with the most kedusha, it's the action with the most kedusha that we can do. And just to stop for a few moments before we start learning, and just to realize what we're doing. When we're about to do a mitzvah, whether it's before we daven, or before we put on tefillin, or before we light our Shabbos candles, or before anything, just to stop a moment and realize the kedusha involved in the action we're about to do. It's not just one of our day-to-day actions. This is an action of specific kedusha. And also, if we stop ourselves from doing averas, or rather when we stop ourselves from doing averas, to stop for a moment and realize why we're not doing the avera. Not just because we don't do it. We're not doing it because the Ribbono Shel Olam, whom we love with all our hearts, whom we care for and who cares for us, has told us that this is not in the interest of the world. This is not in the interest of reality. This is not in the interest of truth that such a thing should be done. That's why we're not doing the Aveda. That's why we're not doing the Aveda. And with that little bit of emotion, linking up the action to ourselves, we'll find that this process of change that has occurred will continue to occur and will continue to grow. We'll find that we are, next year, when we stand at the same time of the year, not the same people we were this year. But we will have changed again, physically, spiritually, emotionally, in our relationships with one another, in our relationships with Torah and with the Ribono Shel Olam, that will actually be people on different statures and on different levels. People who will have changed and will therefore have the right, next year, as hopefully we do this year, to demand on Rosh Hashanah Ribono Shel Olam, even if I don't deserve it, even if we don't deserve it. We've changed. We did it for you. And it was hard. We know how hard it is to change, Ribono Shel Olam. But if we can do it for you, surely, Ribono Shel Olam, you can change some of your negative decisions about us, just for your own sake, to help us out. Change your mind and give us a year of success, a year of good health, and a year of happiness.
Maybe Shus Rav Lopin, Zemora D'Asre, Rabbi Bender, and my colleague Rabbi Polikov. Maybe you know Rabbi Lopin said now a few divertere, but before I can start, I want to say a few words about it. You know, Rabbi Lopin explained why a lady what is only engaged is much more punishment because of a lady what is already married. Said because a lady what is married already, she is afraid to be found out. But lechoira, we can ask of it a big question. Is aloha you don't kill anyone without that is two aiding? Two people seen it and they warn the lady, listen, if you do it you get killed. If not, she doesn't get killed, even 100 people saw it. So how can be that there will be a change between engagement and marriage? Lechora impossible. Areakocha, she knows that it's going to be found. And I probably have to say, because this is a very interesting aloha. A lady what her husband sees in the city is no yisur ichut. When a lady her husband is not in the city, you are not allowed to be the service of whom alone. When her husband sees in the city, bail or bair, as it's not a yisur yichut. It's not a wonderful thing, but not a proper yisur ichut. Why? Says the Gemara, because she's frightened a little bit from her husband, b'chol ofen in those days. B'chol ofen, the aloche by arusa, a lady who is engaged is not like that, she's not frightened from her husband. Because according to aloche, the husband doesn't have any ownership of the lady after the engagement. All the ownership come only after the marriage, the nesuim. The male lady what is doing the aveda after the nesuim, she's frightened a little bit. So this is alone better than the lady make it after the rusin. She feel nothing, he's not my owner yet. And it's very interesting, is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos. Someone wants to do Aveira and he cannot hold himself, what he will do? So the Gemara that he will dress himself black clothing and will go to a place that no one knows him and will do the Aveira. Ask the Meforshim there, what does it help if he put black clothing on him? Says the Meforshim, the black clothing will remind him the day of the death. The Mele, when he will make the Aveira, he will make it a little bit not his old enjoyment, he will feel a little bit sorry. That will make that the Avira will not be so big. If someone make Avira with Krecht or without Krecht, and I heard once a wonderful pshat, is written with a theory in Parshas Haklolet, Tachat asher lo avadeta es Hashem Elokecha besimcha. Because you didn't work a Kodesh Baruch Hu with enjoy, with simcha. As I heard the pshat, it's both, for it get a klole, because you didn't work a Kodesh Baruch Hu besimcha. The answer is that the pshat is so tachat asher lo avadet, as the not working a Kodesh Baruch Hu was besimche. This was his enjoyment. You mean if you make a vira, if you make it not besimche, it's a mild. And another very interesting thing, what he brought in the name from Rabbi Lopin, Legabi Rabbi Lazar HaGodol, that is written, Shiloh Aya Ma'avir Al Midotav, that Rabbi Lazar was standing on his word. Lichora, it means the Gemara in Bobe Metzie. The Gemara tells you, no, Rabbi Lazar HaGodol, they put him in a boika. Even Rabbi Lazar HaGadol was the biggest godl whatever was. Ari, the Gemara says that Kol Chachmi Yisrael, all the Chachomim in this generation, the Tanoim and everything was like Klipat Hashem, was like nothing. like shells of a foot against him. But after picking the putting a boycott, why? Because the Gemara tells a wonderful story in Bo Metzia. Don't want to tell now all the story. And the Gemara tells that he went against all the Chachomim, and he said something is tov, is pure, and they said it's tome, it's not pure. And they see they couldn't stand this thing that to put him a boycott, because in the Torah is written, Achrei Rabim La'atot. As big Talmid Chochem you are, you have to listen to the majority of the remain people. But the explanation can be beautiful. Why he had so powerful to stand? Because he felt I came from a background of Talmidei Chachomim. I know from since I was a child, Torah, why I will not stand? But Rabbi Akiva learned everything when he was older, so he was much more giving up in everything, because he saw everyone what he saw is it. It's a beautiful pshat. I want to touch a point. Baruch Hashem, it's such a beautiful thing that all we came together, not in a simple thing, in a yahrzeit of Zeponovich Erov, the Beis Lepian, and as I heard also, the Zeide of Rabbi Kosofsky. You know what's mean a yahrzeit? A yahrzeit is like Yom Kippur, like we have Yom Kippur, as if we give the din of all what we are doing all the year. A yahrzeit is also Yom Adin for the dead man. Once a year, after they are dead, they are judging him, because let's say someone wrote a book, like Rebbe Lepian, they have a book of him. Someone learned in this book, so he gets from it Musar, he gets from it something, as Rebbe Lepian has now more schuyot in Beit Din Shel Malach. Because he created, and after his death, he creates life, create more people what will come to religion. That's what we call tzadikim b'mitatam, the tzadikim after they are dying, they're still kroim chayim, they're still alive because they create life. Oilom amitzi. As a judge, the bring him, he has to get more scha, in Beinu Shel Malah, he will get more. And Chas v'Sholom, someone wrote a book from Apikorsut, and after he died, people are still reading the book. Once here, they will take him out and they will judge him of what he left in this world. A man doesn't create only when he is alive. He creates also after he will die, because what he put, the seeds what he put. So reading this yahrzeit for them is like Yom Kippur. When we come together and we get a chizuk through the memory of them, it's no question, it's a big thing. And maybe as we help them in their Yom Kippur, they will help us also in our Yom Kippur. The schus at least. I want to stand of a point. You know, in our parsha, if you look, is written when the Torah tells us, Veshavta ad Hashem Elokecha. Veshavta ad, you make tshuva tzila kodesh baruch hu mamish. Comes the Torah right away, how a man can make? A man can be, he made so many aviras in his life, he's so dirty, he saw the bad things what he did. How a man can come to such a stage that this tshuva, when you have charote, he is sorry that he will come to such a state that's really to be Ad Hashem, really next to Kodesh Baruch Hu Mamesh, like Maloche Ashores. Comes the Kodesh Baruch Hu and tells us, don't be frightened, Lo Bashamayimi, it's not in the sky, that you have to go up to the sky to make tshuve. It's written right after Mitzvah Tshuve. The Lo Me'ever Layami, it's not overseas. You don't have to go far away to become the highest stage of tshuva. Beficha ubilvoncha la'aseitzo. That in your mouth, in your heart. Not far away. You don't have to look far away. You have it in yourself. This big tshuva, v'shavto ad Hashem, to come back till HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's in your heart and in your mouth. How can it be such a thing? You know, Izeh Aloche, Israel, afal pi shechoto Israelu. A Jew, after that he made chatoim, is still a Israel. He's still a Jew. What does it mean, this halacha? The Rambam says, and the Maaseh, we don't need the Rambam, it's written in Shir Hashirim. If you see a Jew that behaves bad, as tell Shlomo HaMelech, al tiru nisha nishcha choret. Don't look at me like I am black. I'm not really black. Sheshezavtani Hashemes, the problems. The sun that was out said, make me to look black. But I'm not a black, I'm a white man. So says Shlomo HaMelech. When you see sometimes Jewish people, Beseter HaMadrega, the lowest Madrega, Ashmini et Kolech, they're still pure from inside. All what you see from outside black, it's only from outside, it doesn't come to the inside. Only in certain stages. For it is certain aloches, that if someone has to bring a korban, let's say, to Beis HaMikdash, and he doesn't want to bring, we can force him to bring. Ask the Gemara, how can you force him to bring? Are if a man brings a korban, I don't know if it's a korban. If a man brings a korban against his will, it doesn't help. As answer the Gemara, and the Rambam explains the answer from the Gemara, because a Jew, he doesn't want to bring a korban, the Yetzerora stops him. He doesn't want to spend the money for it. But if he will have to bring the korban, he will give it, with all his heart. From outside, the Yetzerora doesn't let him to spend so much money, but if the Beis Din forced him to bring the korban, you can be sure he will give it with all the heart. Because from inside he is pure, it's only from outside. You know, it's an interesting aloche. Egoises is a man, what is he? 90% is dying, or 99%. Ruba de ruba rov goises in la mite. In the last stage of a man in this world, he is egoises. Old man, 86 years old, or a very big sickness that everyone knows he is going to die every minute. Or the doctorium at least are showing it that you cannot help him. Is there a aloche, a man in such a chase, you are not allowed to touch him? If you are touching him, you are a killer. Because in such a state, you touch a man, he dies right away because he's very weak. Comes the aloche and says, if someone will kill such a man, or will touch him in a way that he wanted to kill him, even if it was only to move his hand, this man is a killer. It's no different if he killed a child 10 years old, or a man 20 years old, or a man who has to live 1 second more. Why is it so? The man is going to die in a minute. It's exactly like you killed a man 20 years old. Why? I don't come to explain. You know, Tzirak Dish is big. There's a lot of explanation in it. But one point I want to explain it. When Kodesh Baruch Hu creates a man in this world, as that is written in the Gemara in Eruvin, Hayom la'asotam u'machar lekabel scharam. Kodesh Baruch Hu sent us to this world to create and to work at Kodesh Baruch Hu in this world, that we can create for ourselves a life nitzchi, for Olam Ha'em. The Gemara tells us, Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Elazar ben Zuria was a guy in the time of the Tanoim, that he was making all the averes in the world. And I don't want to mention the kind of averes here in this Medrash. He made a lot of averes. And the Gemara tells he was kulo shaku, and it has to see the Gemara spend the simani, a wild man. One day happened a small thing, tells the Gemara, what gave him a shak. It's written he was sitting between two mountains and was crying till his soul went out. He was sitting a few hours and was crying, and then he died. Came out a voice from the sky, Elazar ben Zuria lechayo ilomabe. In this minute he was sitting and crying till his neshama went out. He made such a tshuva that Elazar ben Zuria lechayo ilomabe. When Rabbi heard this voice come from the sky, he started to cry, and he said, "Yesh koino iloma b'shoa achas." Once a man can create all his ilomabe in 1 minute, v'yesh koino iloma b'kama v'kama shonim. Some people have to work to create the Olam Haba 50, 60, 70 years. Some people can make it in 1 minute. The Medrash tells us, the Medrash Rabbi in Parsha Toldos is written, Vayarach et Reach Bgadav. When King Yaakov to stole the broches from Esau, as he saw something strange, Ayadai Nedei Esau, and the voice is the voice of Yaakov, the hand is like Esau. Comes the Medrash and give us a marvelous explanation. By a Jew, sometimes you can see his hand is like Esau. He can be a killer, all the voices sing in the world. But the voice always is the Yaakov. It's not from inside. And the Medrash tells us a beautiful thing, sir. Was one Jew that in the time of the Rome, he helped the going to come into Jerusalem to take over Jerusalem. And he helped them to fight against the Jewish people who was in Jerusalem. So it's not a problem, only it's not a religious Jew. It can be the lowest human being in the world. Religious, not how a man helps the Romans to come to take over the holy city Jerusalem from his nation. When they came in, they came to Beis HaMikdash. So Zerah was afraid to go into Beis HaMikdash. He knows he didn't know what he's doing, and he was afraid to go into Beis HaMikdash. So they told him, go in and bring the menorah. So he went in and brought the menorah. Then they asked him, go in and bring another thing, you're still afraid. As he asked him, why you are not going in? So they told him, they are fighting, you know, Eloiki Yisrael. He got a shock, this Jew. And he told him, they're going, they're home. They are afraid to go into Beis HaMikdash, and I am a Jew, not afraid. And he got a shock, he said, I'm not going anymore. He's written in the Medrash. They promised him money, promised him everything else, he said, I'm not going. So they killed him with pains, with Yisurim, and he said, I'm not going in. And so he died. Tells us the Medrash, the lowest Jew in the world. In 1 second, he came to a stage to die al Kiddush Hashem. It's unbelievable. To die with the biggest pain, with the biggest sin, Kiddush Hashem. The Medrash tells us another story. Once they took Rabbi Yossi out letzliva. How is it letzliva? To hang, like the Rambam was saying, they put nails to. As they was putting him on this piece of wood, was they tied in what later they would put him in nails into it. They did it to a lot of Jewish people in those times. So the Rabbi Yossi was one of the biggest Tanoim. So his nephew, the son of his sister, he was not religious, he was going with the Roms. So he was shouting to him to the window, it wasn't Shabbos, look what a kind of a beautiful horse Kodesh Baruch Hu gave you. He called this wood as a joke a horse. As Rabbi Yossi turned to him and told him like that, Ari, you know that I work like Kodesh Baruch Hu. If he gave me such a horse, what he will give to you? That's what he told him. And was going. Greeting the Medrash, this man got a shock. He thought a minute. Rabbi Yossi always died for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In a minute he is dying al Kiddush Hashem. He comes to Ilam HaNetzach. What will be this new? He's written the Medrash that he killed himself, but not in a simple way. He put knives and fire, that he had everything what a man can suffer when he dies. Comes the Medrash and tell us, I had died in a day of sometimes. Aval inside a kol Yaakov. It has only to come out. Every Jew is fire in his soul. It has only to come out. It comes to be such a big fire that you cannot hold it. But it inside, it has only the way to come out. Yisroel afat ishechoto. If you kill by a Jew, 1 minute is around. You can be 20 years old and you will walk 40 years to come to Elam Abed. A goy says in the last second, says the Rambam, if he is making tshuva balechai Elam Abed, to take a second from him, you take from him all the life. That's the way of the life. One thing we saw by the Gdolim Ozbeis, by the Tonevichirov, by Rebbe Lelopian, I didn't know about Kosovsky, so I cannot tell you about him. So Rebbe Lelopian, when he was old, he was a strong man. He could sit in Hebron Yeshiva, I remember once, half a day, from 8 till 1, without to move, from the Gemara, and we looked, didn't eat breakfast right after, and was already after 70 and was sitting 5 hours without moving. And how? We didn't understand from where he was so strong. He was a strong man, but so strong it was unbelievable. The Ponevicherov, when he was old, he was going in the world. But Rome told us when he was here now, sometimes he was dead tired, he was going with his father. His father was already old man. In the night they had to go to another man to collect for me money. But Rav said, I cannot stand off my legs. As his father told him, after 120 years old he will have time to sleep, now we are going. And what does it mean? Vavon Zaken Baba Yamin. He was going through the days. You know, don't let one day to move out. The Gemara says if Chas V'Shalom someone was not mekayim one mitzvah, it's me'uvas lo'yuchal itkon. It's something that you cannot fix it anymore. Because a man has certain amount of time in his life. If you waste it, Chas V'Shalom, every minute, every second what you waste, you waste a moment. I want to tell you about it, a story of the Wilner Goy. But first, one word. It's one story what I think is a mitzvah to tell it in every Rosh Hashanah again and again. There's once a mitzvah, because it gives all the to understand what we are doing in this world. Was once a fight between two nations, and it was 15 years was going the fight. All the sides got killed again and again was a lot of Yesoimim, children without parents, widows, and all the calculations, economic was broken in both sides. So they couldn't stop the war because no one was enough strong. Came one boy and told a very smart thing to the king how to finish the war in 1 week. So the king, beginning didn't want to hear him, but he saw it's something clever. He called to his generals and told him, listen, the best idea what we ever thought in 15 years. So they did it in 1 week to finish the war. They took the other country, completely finished. So the king called to his minister and said, listen to this guy, we have to give some present what no one gave ever before. So tell them, the treasurer told him, listen, let him 5 minutes go to the treasure house and let him catch in 5 minutes whatever he can. That will be, you understand, you don't give him just money. You give him to catch as much as he can, you understand? So you give him a present that everyone will see it as not present. So the king was satisfied and told, okay, and they made a date and they published it in all the country. In the night the king couldn't sleep. He thought in 5 minutes he can take all the diamonds. He take 1 second, he finish with all the money of the king. So he called in the middle of the night to the minister, well, what kind of advice you gave me? So we have to know how to go out of it. As I said, you cannot take your words back. It will be a joke to all the country. So the minister or the police told him, let me check about him. We will find out. So they found that this man was crazy to violence, you know. And even he was very, 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 very poor, he spent all his pennies to go to listen to violence. That was a sickness by him. Don't know if it's sickness or something else. So they decided for the day what he has to go to the treasure, to the place. How do you call it? Treasure house? They will call to the most beautiful violent players in all Europe to come to be there. So as he comes in, they will play, so it will hold him a little bit back, so he will not catch so much. So he didn't know from anything. He was sitting at home and made exercise with his wife. Took a lot of sex and, you know, and packages, you know, how to open because there was second. So came the day, he was all full of sacks around him, you understand, and he got the last advice how to open. So, and all the country was on the mountain to see him. 1 minute he'll come here there. And his wife and his children and his uncles and his grandchildren was waiting outside because then you know they don't have to walk for the rest of their life. Okay, he goes into the treasure house, he only opens the door and at once the violin started to play. And it was so beautiful, he said, 1 minute and I'm going. Before we had time to think anything, the man, you lost your 5 minutes. He heard this, he didn't take anything, he fell down and started to cry. Took him out and his wife told him, what did you do? You will build yourself in 5 minutes. All your life you will have violence and all those things in the world. Now for 5 minutes you couldn't tell yourself, look what you lost. What does it mean? When a man comes to this world, it's a treasure house. You can. The Vilner Goin in the last day, before he died, he was crying, asking, what are you crying? Said, in this world, for pennies I buy tzitzis. Gulev, I can every word what I learned more, I'm making a mitzvah. I can create so much mitzvah, treasure house, I can catch as much as I want. And I'm going away from you, why I will not cry? When a man comes to this world, all his family up there are waiting to see what he will bring back. Everyone made the same mistake. They advise him, they tell him, they teach him kol aterikulo bebet enimo, be careful, you don't know what you are going to get or what you are going to lose, chas v'sholem. Later he comes to this world, comes the 70 years, comes to the malach, he finish already, he didn't catch anything, the last minute he wants to catch and it's too late. We have to understand that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us a treasure house. We can catch so many mitzvahs, so many goods. Every word what we learn in Gemara, the Chofetz Chaim made one, a man can make at least 12,000 mitzvahs a day. If he only learns Gemara, read Gemara, every word is a mitzvah, everything is a mitzvah. When there comes a time, one thing you can learn from the Gedolim, that I tell you, every God was different, but in one thing they were the same. They took the life to go through, it's not a place to see. It's a place to go through, to walk. What a man goes another day, what he slept, the movie what he saw yesterday, what he ate yesterday. Everything is going. What you did, that's what he has with you. And you can see the Panovich Rovo's old man, how he was going. He knew why. But then you see they are going through you. They know why they are going. They know how they are going. They know that's what we have to see from them. That's the biggest smile and the biggest truth that we can give them, that we learn from them. No, Baruch Hashem. It's a beautiful thing to have such the community in South Africa. After all, everyone of this community, Baruch Hashem, also people in our community, becomes to be Netere. I see people are walking through the day, coming in the evening and learning. A man has to learn the maximum what he can. No one has to learn like the other one. The Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't want. Kodesh Baruch Hu wants the maximum what everyone can do. And the maximum means v'chai b'ayim. The maximum doesn't mean to leave the family. The maximum doesn't leave Chas Hashem to break someone. The maximum what you can do is to stay a normal human being. That's the maximum Kodesh Baruch Hu wants for us. A man has children, a man has family, has to look for them. But every minute what he can, that he will catch it. And when he's doing it, he's making the maximum what he can. Another thing that I wanted to say, maybe this chizuk will give a lot of schus. You know, it's one issue what we call issue Lashon Hora. If someone talks Lashon Hora, in every word, he's over of 36 loving. Of 36 issurim in the Torah. In maybe 40 mitzvah says he is over in every word of Lashon Hora. And the Gemara says very simple, Lashon Hora is worse than Gilui Arayot, Shpichut Damim, Ve'avodah Zarah. So, if someone talks Lashon Hora, is worse than a killer. Killer, at least you know that he's a killer. Someone talks Lashon Hora, you can think he's a fine man. Someone who walk away the Zohar, at least is like an animal. But someone who talks Lashon Hora, you can think sometimes that he's still a malach, an angel. And Migiloy Arayot, someone who doing Giloy Arayot kills himself, make a big issue, someone talks Lashon Hora, kill all the world. You know, like the Kohen Gadol was davening in Yom Kippur, Al Anshei HaShomron, the people what was living in the Shomron, Shelo Yeh Bateyem Kivrem, that the houses will not be their Beis HaKvores. We have to daven that Shelo Yeh Pihem Kivrem, that the mouth will not become to be our Beis HaKvores. Because a man can walk HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but sometimes if he doesn't watch his mouth, Chas V'Sholem, he can finish. He will be very surprised. He sought all his life to walk HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Lashon Hora will put him to Gehinnom. I tell you something. I was not born today. I saw Gdolim. I was living next to Rabbi Dessler. A shochan from Shlem Keberman. Near Reb Shmuel Rozovsky. Near Rav Shach. All my life, I saw what is Gdolim. The one thing is to watch the mouth. A community that doesn't know to stop talking Lashon Hora, I say of them, Shatzu b'shamayim p'em, u'leshonam b'eretz te'alech. A community that doesn't watch the mouth, you have to run away from them as much as you can. You are not allowed to live in a place that is Lashon Hora. It's alochim chofetz chayim shmira saloshim. It's kedai to look in it. And I say one thing we have to do in our community. And I beg of David, when it's only shaykh to find time, I am learning it in the yeshiva, shmira saloshim, and also with the Balabatim, to find time, maybe Shabbos, maybe Motzei Shabbat, a little bit to learn. The people will know that is such a Yisur Noiro. Good people, but are making tshuva. And Chas V'Sholem, if they are not watching, they are going to gain them. Isn't other way? Isn't a terim? The Chofetz Chaim says, why people is later than to tikkun Lashon Hora? Sometimes you see Talmidei Chachomim. So the Chofetz Chaim, very simple. They say that this man is a ganev, he's a thief, as I'm allowed to talk about him. They say, this man is the apikoyret. I'm allowed to talk about him. So the Chofetz Chaim in his Akdome. And that breaks the world. And even someone think of another one is apikoyret, is allowed to the Chofetz Chaim to talk with his son, to teach it to his son. But to talk, who said your judgment is right? And you have to be Chas V'Sholem so careful from this thing, poshu to run away. And I tell you, if someone is not worried for me, he can go to Gehinnom with all the Torah mitzvahs. It's nothing worse if he doesn't watch his mouth. And another thing, that to watch, and the other thing, if you have the sum erav, what is belong to the mouth, to magbir the limud atire as much you can. More shiurim, more go to learn, but as I said, the dark, you know, I'm not to take it in such a way, Chas V'Sholem, to break a family. To learn with the children, if someone learn Pashas HaShavua will come on, we sit a little bit with the children, because Ikar HaMitzvah from Talmud Teire is to teach the children. Someone doesn't have the children, if you take young other children to teach them, because kol ha-melamed ben chavir o tere, if we teach something tere, ki lo yelodo, and we will try to build our community. I call it our, because after all we are neighbors, Leinazu and Sidnam together, to to build it of a community where people are working and learning. People are keeping their mouths from Loshinore. People what are making the afterlife kamocha, helping each other, good midas as much as possible, and to be Baba Yomim. Don't let the days schlep you. You take this, use the days and go through them.
First time that we're honored to have with us Rabbi Aliakov in the Beis HaMedrash. Second time, sorry, first time I've had the pleasure. And I would like him to say a few words to you.
I'd just like to take a few minutes and to discuss a little bit the purpose of a get-together on the day of the Yahrzeit. There's a Gemara that says in Yuma Lamed Hei Amid Beis, a very strange thing. It says, Hillel Mechayeves Haniyim Rav Lezer Ben Chasma Mechayeves Hashirim and Yosef Mechayev Es Hanoim. Gemara tells us that when somebody comes up to Shemayim, somebody comes up after living his life on this earth, and they say to him, why didn't you learn Torah? Why were you not involved in doing mitzvahs? And the person says, because I was a poor man, I didn't have the ability, I didn't have the time to do the mitzvahs. I was always busy trying to get my parnasa, always trying to make ends meet. Gemara says that in Shemayim they'll tell this man, look at Hillel. And it goes through telling the story, and I'm not going to take the time to go through the whole story now. The story that Hillel was a very poor man, and even though he had such hardships, he went ahead and he learned Torah. He was Moser Nefesh. He put himself out to learn Torah to the extent that he was one day buried under 4 amos of snow on the top of the Beis Medrash trying to listen to the Torah that they were learning inside the Beis Medrash that Shemayim Avtayim were teaching. If a person comes up to Shemayim and again they say to him, why didn't you learn Torah? Why didn't you do mitzvahs? And he answers, the reason is because I was so rich. I had so many things to take care of. I wasn't able to pay enough attention to the Torah because my life was always harried with the everyday problems that came up with my business dealings. They'll answer him and say, Rav Elezer ben Chasma was fabulously wealthy. And it didn't stop him. He learned. As a matter of fact, he ignored his worldly affairs to the extent that his servants hardly knew him. You could have done the same. And the man comes up to Shemayim again with the same question being asked, and he answers, well, you know, I was a very handsome fellow, and it was just very difficult for me to get my mind on the Gemara. My mind was another thing. I had a whole world. The world was open before me. What they say to this man is, Yosef HaTzadik was very handsome. And Yosef HaTzadik had terrible, terrible troubles with Eshes Potiphar, with the wife of his master. Yet, he was Omer Ben Yisoyen. He did not allow himself to succumb to the Yetzer Hara. And he learned Torah. He was still a bit tzaddik. You could have been the same. And at first glance, this Gemara is a terrific Pella. It's really an unbelievable Gemara. Because nobody wants to be the cause of trouble for another man. So why should the Gemara say that Yosef is Mechayev as HaRishoyim and Hillel is Mechayev? They are the ones through which the Beis and Shemayla and Shemayim, they are able to say to the people who come before them, you could have done better and you should have done better, and as a result of it, the people will get punished. It's a terrible thing to say about Yosef at Tzadik, about Hillel, and about Elazar ben Chasma. And I heard an answer from my Rosh Yeshiva, my Rebbe, Rabbi Weinberg Shlita, that the Pshat in the Gemara is, it's not just that in Shemayim they're going to say to these people, you could have done better, look at what these other people did. The Pshat is that until there was a Yosef in the world, than the people who would come to Shemayim and say, I was handsome. What could I do? Would have a good question, a good taina. They would be saying, they would have a very good answer to the Beis and Shemayla. What could I do? But when Yosef HaTzadik went through this world and showed and actually carried out being a tzaddik, even though he had these troubles, what he did was he implanted in the world the kah, the ability to overcome these type of troubles. And this is what the Gemara is saying about Hillel and about Rebbe Elazar ben Chasma too. The pshat is that when these people went through the world and they took the trouble and worked so hard to be able to withstand their terrible nisyonos, to withstand the trouble and travail that they had in the world, and yet to be tzaddikim, they implanted that capability within the world, and as a result, within every man, every woman, and every child who passes through from then on in, to be able to do the same that they did. And I think that this brings out the point of a yahrzeit very well. The shot is that once we had a Panovizhia Rav with Elia Lapian, Rav Tosofsky, who came through this world, and if we realize the day and age that they lived, the years after a terrible Churban, the years when the Bnei Yisrael were shattered completely by the experiences that they had just gone through, and yet these people said, we are not going to allow that to stop us. From the Churban, we are going to go ahead and build up Torah anew. With the kah, the unbelievable strength that these people showed us, they not only showed the way, but they implanted the ability to follow their lead within our midst too. I'm a relative newcomer to the community. And Baruch Hashem, I'm very impressed with what I see in the community. And yet, at the same time, as a newcomer, I can come in and see